the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
Is Bitcoin a buy? At around $75,000, Bitcoin is down 40% from its peak of $124,000 in October last year. That 40% drawdown is about half the drawdowns of previous bear markets, leading some to believe we have not yet seen the bottom in this cycle. So could it be that we're currently seeing the formation of a bottom? And those taking a 2 to 3 year view will look back at this as a great entry point. In other words, are we witnessing a rather typical bear cycle, but with far less volatility than was the case in the past? Well, to discuss this, we're joined by an old friend of the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, Rob Price, who is CEO of Sound Money. Hi, Rob. Good to talk to you again.
Always good to be with you, Kieran.
Great. Let's dive in. Help us make sense. Where are we at in the market? I mean, I get this feeling there's this lethargy about Bitcoin at the moment, and it's just faded off of the headlines. But, you know, I've seen it before. All of a sudden, the price sparks up and the Google searches start to pour in, and so do the headlines. Where are we at?
Yeah, I do think we're in a bottoming process. It was a sharp drop, from October, November last year to Feb. But yeah, we saw significant liquidations at that level, capitulation, losses, limited response to negative news in the weeks thereafter. That suggested for us that we were in a bottoming process. We try not to get too prescriptive about it. Doesn't mean that price can go lower. I mean, sure, of course price can go lower, but bottoming is a process, and also reallocation is a process. So you're trying to predict the bottom is foolhardy. I think it's more important to understand kind of what season you're in and how you want to act during that season. So yeah, this is a time, I think, for redeployment. When disinterest is as clear as it is that you pointed out that already, sentiment is depressed. These are when the opportunities arise and where the risk return trade-off is far better than it was, 6 months ago, 12 months ago.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen comparisons with Apple and Tesla, and they go back into the early days of Apple, Tesla, these tech stocks. They behaved pretty similar, didn't they, to Bitcoin, where you had these drawdowns of 70, 80%. Now we're looking at Bitcoin drawdown of about 40%. It's, in other words, the volatility seems to be, I want to say disappearing, but it's certainly getting less. Is this how you see the market at the moment?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's clear that the volatility is declining. You can look at that on many different metrics. Once again, sure, we could go lower. Maybe the max drawdown in this period over the last year, maybe it's higher than what we've seen so far, sure. But is it going to get down to an 80% level? I think that's, there's doubt there. But as I said, even if you just don't use that metric, if you just look at kind of volatility metrics, volatility is declining. Volatility has declined again in recent weeks, which is, linking back to that point we made about sentiment being quite depressed. So the market is clearly changing. The market structure is changing. The entrance of more institutional players, ETFs, derivatives are dampening volatility. And there's positives and negatives to that. The positive is that downside volatility is probably reduced. The positive is that we're transitioning more towards a monetary type asset, because we've always said that extreme volatility is a hindrance to some people. But of course, on the upside, it does also mean that that explosive type volatility is probably less likely, certainly the way that we've seen it in the past. Doesn't mean that we can't get upside volatility, but just probably not the same way. But I think I'm also wary to conclude that that implies that the return expectation is completely muted. I mean, sure, maybe it's not the same that it would be in the past. But if you compare Bitcoin to other asset classes, and Bitcoin is, $2.5 trillion, you compare that to the size of gold, government bond markets, there's still a lot of potential there. Bitcoin could grow significantly over the years ahead. And as we've seen, Bitcoin is becoming a more institutional asset class with the entrance of ETFs, of large asset managers. The Clarity Act coming up now is can really be a big kind of boost for confidence and for clarity, creating clarity on what is the market structure for crypto assets. Yeah, I think that kind of progression can really advance the technology. So yes, more kind of less volatility, but sure, I still think, you know, Bitcoin can grind significantly higher over the next, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years.
All right, let's just pivot a little bit away from that. You know, billionaire investor Ray Dalio, he recently came out and said he prefers gold to Bitcoin as a safe haven asset. And he says central banks are unlikely to accumulate Bitcoin as a reserve asset in the same way they do gold or US dollars. That's certainly been the case up to now. But essentially what he's saying is that Bitcoin cannot match gold as a safe haven asset in times of economic distress. Do you think he's right on this?
Well, I mean, listen, there are definitely some points that need to be heard out. Central banks over the last 3 years have been aggressive buyers of gold, and clearly they haven't been turning towards Bitcoin. So there's truth in that. You know, for now, central banks are buying gold rather than Bitcoin. And, you know, Bitcoin needs to own up to the fact that, of course, it has similar qualities to gold. But, you know, over the current time frame, you know, central banks, that's not what they're buying. Does that imply that it can that can never be the case? Well, I think that would be an incorrect conclusion to draw. For the time being, you know, central banks, they're very conservative institutions, right? They stick to the tried and tested. You know, for them already actually to make a decision to buy gold is a deviation of, I guess, of the trend that it has been over the last 10, 20, 30 years, where treasuries were kind of the premium asset. But as I said, to rule out that that could be a change again in the future, I think is foolhardy. Yeah, and sure, you know, over the short term, you know, quantum fears could be holding back some degree of allocation. But those fears and those challenges are surmountable. And if you pull back the lens and you know, Bitcoin still has a lot of superior qualities relative to gold. I mean, gold is a great asset. I like it. But I mean, it's not particularly portable. If you want to send large amounts across the globe, that is a challenge. You know, storing it is expensive. Moving it, as I said, is expensive. You know, Bitcoin, you can send, you know, billions of dollars worth, you know, across the world at pretty low cost. Storing it is pretty easy, both for large institutions and for smaller institutions. It's a much more tech advanced asset. So yeah, you know, it's definitely not not black or white here. Yes, you know, for now, Bitcoin faces some challenges relative to gold, but long term, I'm still very excited about the prospects for Bitcoin relative to gold.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking at central banks that have bought Bitcoin as a reserve asset, El Salvador, I think Bhutan has done it. Yes. Central African Republic did a certain amount. And pretty soon, possibly the United States. That would be a game changer, wouldn't it, if the United States started to accumulate? I mean, they already have, in terms of confiscated Bitcoin from criminal activities. But if it was to become part of their reserve asset strategy, I think the world for Bitcoin would change pretty dramatically. Do you see that mm-hmm. going that way?
Well, listen, I mean, it is actually part of the reserve asset strategy. But as you've said, for now, it's just confiscated Bitcoins. This is in the US. They haven't conducted any net new buying. But I mean, I think the decision actually already was, you know, quite meaningful that you now have the world's largest economy and country and government, at least saying that it's a strategic asset. Some of that decision is probably clouded by the fact that it's the Trump administration. But as I said, it could imply at some point net new purchases. That would be a big change. And the conversations are changing. The central banks are now having to face up to questions about, should Bitcoin be part of the strategy? That's a very different world to where we were 5, 10, 15 years ago. So, yeah, I mean, the wheels are turning here. You know, sometimes I think we just get a little bit lost on time frame, expecting these things to happen even quicker than we should.
Yeah. In a recent article, you were talking about financial advisors and they struggle with Bitcoin as an investment class. I just want you to summarize your thoughts on that, because this is another gateway, I think, for more people to enter into the Bitcoin market. What is the struggle that financial advisors have with this asset class?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's on numerous different different levels, Kieran. I think one of the key ones is that it is a non-traditional asset. You know, most of you know traditional investors just take the existing money as the default, right? Rands in South Africa, dollars globally. They don't question what money should be. They don't think about alternative monies whatsoever. It's just a given. But of course, there are different ways to view money. But that is ideologically and psychologically different. I mean, tied to that is that part of the underlying education that most investors receive is in a certain school of thought. And so to think about that differently, I'd almost describe that as it's almost a slightly like religious conversation, you know, where you've been taught in the school of thought, and now somebody's telling you that that is not quite right. That can really grate and grain. And I guess linked to that is you've got this whole new ecosystem where some people are making enormous amounts of money, some people, of course, losing enormous amounts of money, but also this kind of this can grate when you know you're a financial professional that has studied for 5, 10, 15 years, you know, getting PhDs and so on and so forth, CFA, charter holders. But now you've got this whole group of people that are making money, and some of these people haven't really studied finance at all. So there's, once again, there's a bit of a psychological chasm there to cross that I think is difficult. And then also, once again, if we just return back to the asset, it's not particularly easy to value Bitcoin with traditional valuation measures. You know, traditional financial people are rigorous analysts. I mean, most of the time, they've got their valuation models and metrics, you know, discounted dividend, discounted cash flow models, dividend discount models. But these don't apply with assets that are non-yielding, don't provide a dividend, don't provide cash flow. So you need to think differently in order to you know, come to an appreciation of Bitcoin. And all of these kind of things contribute towards, you know, there's a lot of hurdles to get over there. And so I still find, you know, young people will come to me and speak about Bitcoin. And they say, listen, if I mention Bitcoin in the office, the people just switch off. The older guys sometimes just switch off because it's just not in their worldview.
It is interesting to note that the Bitcoin dominance is at about 60%. In other words, 60% of the entire crypto market is Bitcoin. And it's been climbing since 2022. So that's 4 years of growing dominance of Bitcoin. And it's kind of counterintuitive in a way because people thought altcoins would come in. Altcoins mean everything else that is not Bitcoin. And would just sort of swarm the markets. Ethereum's dominance has been falling. It only accounts for about 9% of the market at the moment. What are the dynamics at play here, in your opinion? And are there any altcoins that look attractive to you?
Yeah, well, stick on the first bit of that question, and maybe we can come back to attractiveness of other ones later. Now, I think the key here is that Bitcoin still has the clearest product market fit when it comes to crypto. It is still the, you know, it's still the first crypto asset. It has got the longest history. It is the most decentralized. And it's also, as I said, got that product market fit. Bitcoin is not trying to do a lot. I mean, it still can be complex to get your head around it. But you know, Bitcoin is a protocol to allow people to send and receive and store value in a scarce unit. And it tries to get that right and get it robust. And that is, it was clearly very powerful. I mean, people were working on that innovation for many years before Bitcoin to try and get to this digital cash. You know, Bitcoin achieved that. And it is not only just digital cash, it is the first existence of digital scarcity in a world of digital abundance. So this is an absolutely profound innovation. And I really encourage people who haven't kind of dwelled on that. We're often looking at price and we're doing all this other interesting, fancy stuff, like come down to the basics here. This is an absolutely profound innovation. We have digital scarcity. And so Bitcoin, as I said, it's got that product market fit. Most other crypto assets, what are they trying to do? They're trying to apply Bitcoin's principles in other realms. Generally, they try not to compete with Bitcoin because Bitcoin has got that aspect of store of value. So, you know, other assets are trying to do different things. You know, Ethereum, Solana, these other layer one ecosystems, they're trying to provide platforms to create decentralized applications. Now, listen, I'm not a Bitcoin maximalist who says that there's no value there. I think there is value there. I think it is interesting, but it is much more complex. One, complexity comes with risk. So therefore, there's much higher risks of bugs, exploits, hacks. Those are all challenges that the rest of the ecosystem has to deal with to a far greater degree than Bitcoin. You know, Bitcoin, if it has security challenges, they're much more like kind of on the individual. The individual lost their password. or the individual faced a phishing attack, but that's not actually a weakness of the protocol itself. That's on the individual. So there's all sorts of those challenges in crypto. In addition, crypto has also seen massive supply of new coins. And I was actually, I'll try and send you the chart. I don't have it up on hand here, but the number of new crypto assets that are issued each year is growing. And it went absolutely wild in 2025 with Pump Fund making it very easy to issue assets. So those principles of scarcity, yes, of course, some crypto assets are trying to create scarcity in other realms. But if you've got an incredible proliferation of these coins, then there's not much scarcity, is there? So there are a number of challenges when it comes to the broader ecosystem. And Bitcoin, it's not that it doesn't have challenges, but as I said, it's got, you know, it's pretty secure, it's pretty safe, it's got a long history, it's got a huge amount of hashing power that's going into it, and it's not trying to do a huge amount. So it's got clear product market fit. It's reasonably easy to explain that to institutional investors. And they're like, oh, okay, yes, a digital store of value. I'll take some allocation there. Yeah, whereas it's just a bit more of a challenge than the rest of crypto.
Yeah, I got an email just this week about a coin that did a 30,000% gain. Great if you got in it, you know, but that looks like a complete, you know, pump and dump scheme. And they're still coming at us at great velocity.
To get to those kind of gains, of course, a coin has to be incredibly small, you know, and probably very new. You know, I'm sure they're just sending the email there to grab your attention. But just, you know, to the second part of your question, I just wanted to reiterate, it doesn't imply that there's not value elsewhere in crypto. We just have to be quite circumspect about what we're doing. Does it really apply the principles of crypto? You know, is this thing decentralized? Is it scarce? Does it have product market fit? Stablecoins are an outgrowth of crypto. They're incredibly powerful innovation. But remember, they're not actually scarce and they're not actually decentralized, but they do put tokens onto a global network. And that's powerful. That's, you know, the whole of TradFi is, you know, rushing into stablecoins to try and, you know, capitalize on that. But as I said, there are innovations elsewhere. One just needs to be a little bit judicious and understand also the, you know, the risk that exists in kind of new tech investments.
Final question here. So talk about your crypto fund called Sound Money. I think that is the name of it. Your performance has outstripped that of Bitcoin over the last year. How did you manage that? And what is in the fund?
Yeah, Sound Money Capital, we're an actively managed fund. Bitcoin is our benchmark, which speaks a bit, you know, kind of to our conversation so far. You know, we do hold other crypto assets. We generally don't take left tail assets because we think that there's a fair amount of risk in things that are very new, don't have much history, haven't been tried and tested. You know, we don't take illiquid positions either. We want to be always exposed into liquid assets that we can get into and out of pretty easily. And a lot of our allocation will sit in Bitcoin and we'll, you know, trade around that allocation into Bitcoin because, once again, we think it is the most important asset in the ecosystem. But we will take select exposure into other assets when it fits the principles, you know, that we think hold true. So, you know, are these things decentralized? Does it have product market fit? Is there a clear use case? You know, we like things like decentralized exchange, but also important to note that we won't just take allocation into asset myopically because we like the project. We think that is the wrong approach because there is a lot of competition in the crypto ecosystem. A lot of assets do bleed relative to Bitcoin. So we take a very disciplined approach in terms of, yes, a product needs to fit our criteria in terms of we like it, we think it's a real project, we think it's not a scam, we like the people, the founders who run it, they're doing a good job. But then in addition to that, is it actually showing strength relative to Bitcoin? And that key discipline has served us well. So yeah, we've taken exposure. I mean, in terms of like how performance has panned out over the last 6-9 months, we were quite defensively positioned into the end of last year. We have a systematic data framework which assesses financial markets. We were concerned about the risk late last year. So that added value being defensive relative to Bitcoin. We reallocated, not at the lows, because we don't think we can predict the lows, but, you know, around 70, 71,000, which was a decent correction. And then we did take select exposure into some non-Bitcoin assets, things like Hyperliquid, things like Zcash, Hyperliquid as a decentralized exchange. Very interesting project. One of the only places that you were able to trade oil over the weekend during the war in the Middle East. So that's turned the heads of lots of traditional financial market participants saying, hey, listen, I can trade, I can hedge over the weekend when other venues are closed. Well, that's a clear value proposition. And something like Zcash, I mean, we think that privacy is still important in this world of increasing surveillance. I think people do value their privacy. Privacy is important. It doesn't mean that you're trying to do something nefarious. I think of privacy as a human right. So yeah, Zcash was an exposure, a position, an asset that we liked, and the fund has benefited from these decisions.
Terrific stuff. Rob Price, CEO of Sound Money. We're going to leave it there. Look forward to talking to you again and see how the fund is doing a few months from now.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.